a rock-rimmed quarry pit in the very heart of old Edinburgh. The grass market was a place of historic echoes. The yelp of a little dog there would scarce seem worthy of record. More in harmony with its stirring history was the report of the Tyne gun. At 1 o'clock every day there was a puff of smoke high up in the blue or grey or squally sky. Then a deafening crash and a backfire fusillade of echoes. The oldest frequenter of the market never got used to it. On Wednesday, as the shot broke across the babble of shrill bargaining, every man in the place jumped, and not one was quicker of recovery than wee Bobby. Instantly ashamed, as an intelligent little dog, who knew the import of the gun, should be, Bobby denied his alarm in a tiny pink yawn of boredom. Then he went briskly about his urgent business of finding old Jock. The market was closed. In 5 minutes the great open space was as empty of living men as Greyfriars Kirkyard on a weekday. Drovers and hostlers disappeared at once into the cheap and noisy entertainment of the White Hart Inn that fronted the market and set its squalid back against Castle Rock. Farmers rapidly deserted it for the clean country. Dwellers in the tenements darted up wynds and blind closes, climbed twisting turnpike stairs to windy roosts under the gables, or they scuttled through noble doors into foul courts and hallways. Beggars and pickpockets swarmed under the arches of the bridge, to swell the evil-smelling human river that flowed at the dark and slimy bottom of the Cowgate. A chill November wind tore at the creaking iron cross of the Knights of St. John, on the highest gable of the temple tenements, that turned its decaying back on the kirkyard of the Grey Friars. Low clouds were tangled and torn on the castle battlements. A few horses stood about, munching oats from feed boxes. Flocks of sparrows fluttered down from timbered galleries and rocky ledges to feast on scattered grain. Swallows wheeled in wide descending spirals from mud villages under the cornices to catch flies. Rats scurried out of holes and gleaned in the deserted corn exchange. And round the empty marketplace raced the frantic little terrier in search of old Jock. Bobby knew, as well as any man, that it was the dinner hour. With the time gun, it was old Jock's custom to go up to a snug little restaurant that was patronised chiefly by the decent poor. Small shopkeepers, clerks, tenant farmers, and medical students living in cheap lodgings in Greyfriars Place. There, in the ye old Greyfriars dining rooms, owned by Mr. John Trail, and 4 doors beyond the kirkyard gate, was a cosy little ingle nook that old Jock and Bobby had come to look upon as their own. At its back, above a recessed oaken settle and a table, a tiny paned window looked up and over a retaining wall into the ancient place of the dead. The view of the heaped up and crowded mounds and thickets of old slabs and through stones, girt all about by time-stained monuments and vaults, and shut in on the north and east by the backs of shops and lofty slum tenements, could not be said to be cheerful. It suited old Jock, however, for what mind he had was of a melancholy turn. From his place on the floor, between his master's hobnail boots, Bobby could not see the kirkyard, but it would not, in any case, have depressed his spirits. He did not know the face of death, and, a merry little ruffian of a terrier, he was ready for any adventure. On the stone gate pillar was a notice in plain English that no dogs were permitted in Greyfriars. As well as if he could read, Bobby knew that the kirkyard was forbidden ground. He'd learned that by bitter experience. Once, when the little wicket gate that held the 2 tall leaves ajar by day chanced to be open, he had joyously chased a cat across the graves and over the western wall onto the broad green lawn of Heriot's Hospital. There, the little dog's escapade bred other mischief, for Heriot's Hospital was not a hospital at all, in the modern English sense of being a refuge for